from Keeneland Breeders' Cup 2020. A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevepick.com. Absolutely perfect, idyllic, pristine. Just could not be nicer. The only thing missing is you from making your way to Lexington and by car, by plane, by train. And getting excited about tomorrow and Saturday. You're going to be able to do that anyway. You just can't do it here. hope to provide vicarious pleasure, at least on the handicapping front and preparatory aspects. Been a busy morning on the racetrack, and it'll be a busy morning on the airwaves because we've got a pretty full slate and a lot of international, a lot more international discussion with Nick Luck. Nick's going to join us first. He's actually on the other side of the grounds, and so we're not going to have the pleasure of a face-to-face visit with Nick Luck. We'll send a call into space, then through his English, through his UK phone, and then right back down here to about, I don't know, probably about maybe a third of a mile up the stretch. We'll talk to Nick Luck, and then we'll actually go around the world because I didn't realize until I talked to him this morning, but Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad who was going to visit Nick, Kev had already made, he's already made the move to Singapore. So we'll talk to him in Singapore and get his opinions. And of course, a lot of you probably already have read his two entries in or at the races, Breeders' Cup Betting Companion. Got it up online, kind of right on time, actually, at about 6 o'clock last night. I put the links up at Facebook and at Twitter, and I'll do it again today later. And kind of glad that we did it on the timing that we did. Given some of the changes, most notably Vekoma coming out yesterday while we were on the air with George Weaver, letting Dave Grenig know that Vekoma it's so funny because you could tell, I think weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I don't know, somebody asked, and I reached out to George, and I said, you know, you're still on track, and he was positive, and we reported that at the time. But just the fact that, you know, he didn't make the first set of horses that made their way here, it just felt like they were kind of making their way tentatively toward this assignment. And so there's other opportunities. It's too bad. And it certainly has changed up everybody's approach. I think you have to really rethink. I know that a lot of people probably were up against Vekoma anyway, and you know, having a favorite to bet against is one of the really attractive propositions at this event. But so be it. And of course, Lasting Legacy draws in, and so you still have a field of 14, and it will be. I have to think that Yaupin ends up now, you know, both Yaupin and ZZ Rocket are 7-2, but Yaupin's going to have kind of a glaring set of PPs for people to, you know, to look at, and it feels like they'll gravitate there. Be interesting to see. I think Frank's Rocket comes down from the 10-1 as well. I think she's going to prove attractive. Be interesting to see what Diamond Oops does. Mike Welch, who of course tracks the sprint, we are going to talk to Mike, as I speculated yesterday, in hour three. So Nick Luck and Kev Humphreys early. I think Pete's going to swing by at some point in the first half of the show. Pete Fornital will get some thoughts from Pete, and we're going to check in with Nick Tamaro, and we'll get the juvenile races, tomorrow's five juvie events. We'll get those discussed, and I given that so many like to, you know, listen from the podcast side and can't listen to us live here on Sirius XM in the mornings, I'm going to try to get some Friday opinions here, because rather than, first of all, take up a lot of tomorrow, I mean, certainly when Scully and DeRosa join us, and Jay Bridman and Hammer and Jimmy Ventura, and, you know, we'll, everybody that handicaps will certainly provide a quick hit at the Friday races. But tomorrow, really want to make sure that Saturday is the prime focus. So Nick is going to join us as well, and we'll get the Friday plays. I also want Nick to maybe riff on the two-day wagers. And for those of you that aren't aware, I'll repeat them again. The juvenile turf to the big turf, the juvenile fillies on the dirt to the distaff, and, of course, the juvenile to the classic. Those are your three two-day wagers, your two-day doubles, which are always fun and always popular. I think Marcus Hirsch is, I haven't actually heard back from Marcus, but we had tentatively planned, I think, toward getting Marcus in here. Steve Haskin, it's Thursday, so we'll get Steve Haskin. I heard from Tony. Tony can't join us, and he said the only opinion he wants to offer out there is on Improbable. He really likes Improbable in the classic, but he's got a hospital visit with Maddie today at Children's Hospital in Philly, so Tony won't join us. And actually, I do have a couple of pieces of jockey news that I want to bring in. I'll do that in a minute. To my pleasure, actually, they have installed another one of those Longines wristwatch clocks on the turf course, on the backside of the turf course. You know, these have basically propped up at every venue now, and good for Longines. Happy to have them as a worldwide sponsor of horse racing. But it's literally right across from where I am, and so I don't even have to go, you know, figure out what time it is, so I can look right up and see the clock. But I do, I've got two sad passings I want to get to, and then a good news, and two of them involve jockeys, and I was going to save it for Tony. But I'll come back to it momentarily. So Nick Luck, Kev Humphreys, Nick Tamaro, Pete Fornatel, Marcus Hirsch, I think, Mike Welsh, Steve Haskin, and there's a chance late for a couple of other handicapping and clock types. Chance we'll get a hold of Gary Young in hour three as well today. I might as well pass these along. Sadly, news yesterday from the horse playing and the contest community, certainly the NHC community and beyond, and not just the contest world at all, because John Conti had been around New York racing for years before, you know, the contest world kind of bubbled to the surface. And the word came yesterday that John had passed, and it really brought a wave of, you know, of appreciation and sadness. He was a tremendous character. Whether you saw him on the Horse Players series, I mean, I'm sure on a wide basis, a lot of people, got to know him there. But he had, for years, you know, had his handicapping sheet, the green, grass is green. And I made the point yesterday in appreciating John and honoring John's memory, he was way ahead of the curve on focusing your bankroll and your handicapping on grass racing. And I mean, certainly I think the majority of us grew up with the main track. And, you know, that was the, you know, there were turf races, but not like we have today. And John was out in front of it, that the turf provided, you know, not better, but a different opportunity for certain kinds of handicappers, you know, trip handicappers and pace. And, you know, it wasn't all about speed, and it still isn't on the grass. And that was John's specialty. The grass is greener. he'll really be missed. And I know that the last couple of years, his health had really deteriorated and just saddened. I also will pass along, and when I mentioned Tony and jockey news, at our website at Derby Trail, our friend Dan had heard of the passing of Frank Amonte Sr. And I think for a lot of us, Amonte's name, 10, 12, 14 years ago, bubbled to the surface when he wanted to become a winning rider at the age of 70 and came very close. Got beat in the last couple of jumps, but 85, I think I saw Frank Amonte Sr. And then on a bright note, I don't want to have everybody downcast. I got a wonderful direct message from Rosario Montanez, and at the time of Rosario's injury, the severity and I mean, the concern for his well-being, was pronounced. And, what happens a lot of times with these injuries with riders, we respond immediately. There's a big outpouring of support and concern. And then, they start to work toward recovery. And we don't get as much of a chance to, to keep following up. So I was very glad that Rosario sent me a note, and he said he wanted to make sure to say thank you, and which was kind of him, but hardly necessary. And he says he's doing great. He said he's got 6 months. He's got 6 months of work in rehab, but he's expecting to ride. And the courage involved in this is beyond belief. And I said to him that I mean everybody in the riding communities. The courage goes without saying, given what he's been through and, the previous injury that, you would have thought, would have deterred anybody from continuing to pursue this as a career, he's going to come back again. And, just amazing. To me, that guys would wake up in a hospital bed, immobile, and not knowing if they're going to have the use of their arms and legs or whatever it might be, and their first thought is to coming back and how quickly they'll be able to come back, and invariably it seems they come back faster than than the doctors tell them. The respect and awe that we should have for the men and women that do this, I mean, you can't say it enough. And, I'll mention that, there's been two aspects. There's been two aspects of racing-related, off-the-racetrack publicity that's gone on here. If you've been watching the TVG presentation, which is really wonderful, I mean, a tremendous job, and they're covering it from all angles, and they're making sure to devote time to the aftercare elements, and so they've had a series of the second career organizations that they've showcased, and to their credit, and PDJF and so forth. So every time that these topics come up, it's a timely and valuable reminder of how much we need to, not only do we need to support the game through the windows and the contributions we make there as we try to make money, but peel off. Hopefully everybody makes something this weekend and peel some off for PDJF and for Jockeys and Jeans and for aftercare. So that there's, let me get that in. We're going to reach for Nick Luck and get Nick going, and off we go. As we wait, as Casey reaches out, I'll mention, you know, just like I said yesterday, there's so many horses here now, it's a little bit head spinning. And every morning you're seeing some horses that are on the track for the first time. We got to see, you know, some of the ones that have come over from Churchill, including Tom's Detat, who looks terrific. I mean, it goes without saying, I suppose, a veteran polished horse like that. But you're going to hear some interesting things, I think, from Mike Welsh, because there are a couple little things that have happened on the racetrack in the morning. He made a very, if you saw the tweet, and I asked him about it when I saw him, Mutasa Beck was out there, and by my standards was, or Mr. Money, excuse me, Mr. Money was acting up and was acting bad, and Mutasa Beck was completely unperturbed. And it's one of those little things that you don't, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, a handicapping portion, but it's a mental note that, you know, a horse that shows composition, a young horse, particularly a two-year-old, that you know, it was just unfettered, and that those little things about how they handle, you know, the ship, and you know, you've heard trainers so often talk about, you know, that part of it, and you know, you also have seen the horses sometimes melt down and just lose it as well, and so that little you know, little extra that can make a difference. I don't know if Mutasa Beck, I'm not sure how I'm personally handling him when it comes to the juvenile turf, but that's not a bad segue into our conversation for this hour with Nick Luck and then with Kev Humphreys, because, of course, the International Invaders well represented on Friday in the juvenile turf and the juvenile filly turf, and then into Saturday. Nick Luck, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I am looking up the stretch, and I assume that you're down. You're there somewhere.
I am here. I am here in Kentucky. I've been in since Monday. Should have been Sunday, but got a connection hold in Philadelphia. But got here for the draw and been here ever since. And very grateful to be here. It's not easy, as we know, to get around at the moment, but. But very happy to be here, and I can't wait. I think it's a terrific event. The weather's great. The track looks good, fair. Not too many horses that shouldn't be here are here, and not too many horses that should be here aren't here. So we're in good shape.
Well, and I didn't get a chance. I was at the draw, and it did seem like you had virtually parachuted in, the way Brittany Erton kind of indicated that you were literally delivered on time for the draw. Well, Nick, you know, you've been to enough of these and so many international gatherings like this. Unfortunately, a lot of these gatherings are now becoming familiar with the lack of attendance, and some thoughts about conducting this particular event in front of a virtually empty racetrack.
Well, I think it'll stand up quite well by comparison this year in terms of some sort of little mini buzz and sort of little atmosphere. I think, you know, we're fortunate in a sense this year that this is being run at Keeneland. If ever there was a time you wanted it to be at a boutique venue, it's this, because it's not going to be too cavernous. It's not going to feel like a great sort of bar.
Good point.
Downs or even a Santa Anita. So I think the contrast won't be quite as stark in that respect. A bit more intimate, as you know. And I think the other point to note is that given that owners are allowed to attend and bring several guests, that there could be sort of around 3,000 people there, which is not a completely insignificant amount to make some sort of atmosphere. So I think by comparison, it'll stand up well. You know, you look at the Melbourne Cup, there was nobody there. You look at the Derby this year at Epsom, and that was eerie. It was like that's come to be the most bizarre day I've had with no spectators. Royal Ascot, I thought they did a great job because they were right in the meat of the lockdown at the time. But again, there was nobody there. So, you know, by comparison to some of these great events, I think the Breeders' Cup will stand up okay.
You mentioned the Melbourne Cup, and I knew that part of our conversation was going to have to segue through a series of events that are kind of piling up for the O'Brien Barn, and a mix of tragedy and a mix of happenstance and ambient conditions have made for, I would say, Nick, or guess, the worst stretch of his career?
In terms of unfortunate incidents, yeah, quite possibly, and worse than unfortunate incidents in the case of the fatalities to Wichita and to Anthony Van Dyke. I mean, there have been issues in Europe with the contaminated feed batch that scuppered Aidan O'Brien's Arc weekend. You know, these things happen. It's probably not going to happen again. I'd imagine that for all that it was very frustrating and costly at the time, it's something from which you can fairly easily move on. What's been happening in Australia is not something from which you can quite so readily move on, particularly when you're losing horses of the caliber of Anthony Van Dyke and Wichita, and two hitherto pretty tough and sound horses as well. It's been, you know, well campaigned. It's not like these are young, immature horses. So there's got to be some sort of internal scrutiny, which I'm sure there will be, because that's just the way they operate. They're never going to leave any stone unturned. But there's also got to be external scrutiny in Australia on why so many horses are losing their lives, and particularly in the Melbourne Cup. That's seven horses in 8 years. Now, if that was seven horses in 8 years in a Breeders' Cup race, then you're never going to hear the end of it, and quite rightly so. And you know, we know how, say, Californian racing has had to adapt, have a root and branch inquiry, change policy and procedure in order to turn round welfare issues that were threatening to undermine its very fabric this time last year. Well, now I think Victoria Racing Club and Melbourne have to do something similar, because this is the highest profile race in their country. In terms of where it figures in the national consciousness of the country that it's running, it's probably the most high-profile race in the world in that regard, in terms of relative to the population of its own nation. And so, if you've got an event that's threatening to undermine a sport that in its own country is extremely popular, that's an enormous worry. So, whether it's the unsatisfactory, this is only hearsay from Australian friends of mine, unsatisfactory training facility at Werribee that some of the Europeans have to train on, whether it's the unusual preparation, whether it's climatic conditions, whether it's the way the races are run, whether it's track maintenance, whether it's a combination of all of the above, something has to be looked at to make sure this stuff's happening.
Well, in addition to, you know, the horses that were preparing for assignments and then were shifted because of the weather in France and the UK and the feed issue. Yeah, there was also the mix-up, the horse mix-up that actually impacts the discussion here. And it really has seemed like just a cloud over the head kind of a scenario. So it is the backdrop. And then, Nick, once we arrive here, there is this protracted situation where the O'Brien horses haven't been winning in North America now for a fairly extended period. Some thoughts on how we view the entire Ballydoyle camp the next 2 days.
Well, you're right to point out that Aidan hasn't had a winner in America, I think, since the 2018 Belmont Oaks.
I think that's right.
And it stretches back, 58 runs. However, within that 58-run spell, there have been horses that have run perfectly creditable races. And we saw two or three run perfectly good races at last year's Breeders' Cup, and we know that he always brings a lot of horses here, and some of the ones with rather less obvious chances. Still, that said, I think you raise a valid point. And I think that the market finally is starting to have these horses at the right sort of price rather than be massively overbet like they were before. I mean, I wouldn't be massively deterred. Yeah, Aidan's still training Group 1 winners. He's still training the first and second in the Dewhurst the other day, but he's still training the winner of the Critérium de Saint-Cloud the other day. You know, it's still an operation that's churning out Group 1 winners with the sort of regularity that virtually every other stable in the world would envy. So you have to sort of temper too much panic. But I think you're right to point out the statistics, and it's certainly one that he'll be wanting to reverse this year. He's got a few chances to do so.
Let's dive in and review some of the spots. And of course, the Invaders go well beyond the O'Brien runners. And we've talked, Nick, kind of mirthfully the last several years about the juvenile turf sprint and how it seemed tailor-made when created for international participants, and yet it's been a bit of a mystery. And O'Brien brings Lipizzaner, and then Nigel Tinkler, and I kind of latched on to a Racing Post piece about 3 weeks ago involving Tinkler and You Better Believe It, and their odyssey, and Tinkler seemed really excited about coming.
Yeah, and he should be. I mean, this is not a stable that's likely to have too many British Cup runners down the years. And for the jockey, it's only, I think, his third ride in a stakes race. It's great loyalty from the owners, Martin and Lisa Webb, to lead him on. Yeah, they've got to make sure the horse gets out of the gate a bit sharper than he has been, if he's going to have a chance here. But on the balance of his form, he's probably got more compelling credentials than either of the other European runners in this race. Yeah, Mikey Gerke can be a tricky so-and-so in the gate. Holly Doyle's going to have to really get him motivated from stall one, but he is very effective around the bend. And a Lipizzaner, he's hard to assess, really, because his form, you think, falls a bit short, but he has got that American pedigree, which gives you a bit of hope. So, I would say, I think You Better Believe It has the strongest overall profile of the Europeans in this race, but I strongly suspect that they'll all get blown off the board.
Anything in here that, when you've looked at the race, that appeals to you?
I quite like Momar, with the blinkers on. That's a clear statement of intent. I think the horse with brazen speed, obviously Golden Power's the horse to beat, and Wesley Ward doesn't seem to mind stall 14, but I thought if you were looking for one at a bit of a price, Momos might be the answer.
I love it. Well done. The juvenile turf tomorrow and this 1 mile event, you know, I'll use all the tropes, Nick, that we trot out. And this has been a very successful event for visitors. And the Philly side of things has been much more frustrating. Feels like there's some very nice horses in here. And Seal Away and New Mandate, Cadillac, all Invade. There happens to be Ibico, who started the career in Ireland. And then you look outside, the Learjet from Michael Bell, Ray Beckett with Devil Walla, and Go Athletico. I've got some people who are very savvy watchers of, you know, pace and dynamic that says Go Athletico has got a real look in here.
Yeah, well, Go Athletico beat Seal Away 2 starts ago as well, so it's not impossible. Seal Away, I don't like the draw, and obviously you don't really know what he achieved last time because it was virtually unraceable ground, and he's beating horses he probably couldn't handle it. Still, I mean, he's a hardy, tough horse, and he deserves a chance here. He's, you know, that is, you know, on the face of it, the single best piece of form in the race. However, I think there are others with more compelling credentials of the Europeans. I mean, you'd have to think Battleground is one of them, even though his form is not as good as the others. And he's got a perfect pedigree for it. He's out of found. He's by Warfront. He's been laid away for it. And Aidan O'Brien does have a historically good record in this race. So it's more about potential than performance with him. So I'm not necessarily saying he's a bet, but he is a nonetheless interesting runner. And Cadillac does have some very good form. He's only bubbling just under the best juvenile European form this season. I mean, time will tell how strong that is, but he's not far behind the very best, and he won't mind the surface. I think he's a horse that should run well. And New Mandate, I think, is a horse that's exciting. I don't know whether he'll want the ground as quick, but he has looked a very, very exciting horse with a rapier-like turn of foot, both at Doncaster and at Newmarket. The Frankie Dettori seems a big fan of his. He recommended the purchase to the owner. And if he believes in him, I think that gives the horse a significantly greater chance. The trainer's won a race at Breeders' Cup before and knows what he's doing. And he actually runs Devil Walla as well, who's a very different type of horse, a bit more laid-back horse, but still a horse with some ability. I think he'll go forward. But I think if it comes down to the horse with the sharpest turn of speed, then new mandate is one that I'd be quite interested in.
Nick, because I some of the themes of these conversations always bear repeating for people who either forget or are listening for the first time. Provide your treatise on the stretch out for a lot of the imports that in many cases have been running, you know, six and seven, have been running on straights, etc., and then making the transition to two turns. This is actually a fairly narrow and tight turf course too, as well. Explain people how they should in general approach the Euros making that transition.
Well, I think in the juvenile races, you do have to really just look at class. I mean, you've seen over the years, time and time again, in the early days, those juvenile turf races weren't very good. You know, horses like Donativum and Pounce, I don't think they finish in the first six or seven now. They're much stronger. I think they're stronger because European trainers are sending better horses to them. They never used to send good horses over. And I think the quality of American turf horses is getting better and deeper, particularly in the juvenile division, because the American trainers like Brad Cox and particularly Chad Brown are buying more raw materials from European yearling sales. So I think that over time you're going to get a much more even distribution of the gene pool, of the genetic talent pool between the two nations, and I think that will bear out in time.
It's a timely ask, because when we get to the juvenile filly turf tomorrow, we've got the presence actually of a North American based or owned player in Campanelle, and I've been surprised, Nick, at how many people feel like they're obliged to stand against Campanelle. I was a little surprised by this, because you go and you know, you win the Queen Mary and then stick around and win the Prix Mornier. You would think that would be indicative of a premium class player, and it's strictly a matter of stretching out. Talk a little bit about how to approach the juvenile filly turf.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think it's dangerous to assume that or it's dangerous to be dogmatically against Campanelle, because it's not like Wesley Ward hasn't been here before. You know, he's taken horses to Ascot, won at Ascot, won in France, and then come back and won races at the Breeders' Cup, or at least run well in the Breeders' Cup. So, as I say, I think it's quite a dangerous assumption that they're either not going to stretch out or not train on. You know, the mind goes back to Hootenanny, was it, who won the Windsor Castle at Ascot, finished second in the pre-Morney, and then stretched out to a mile at Santa Anita and won under Frankie Dettori. So he's done it before, and it's not beyond the bounds of possibility in that respect. So I think it would be dangerous to pigeonhole her just as a sprinter, and she won the Morney on quite testing ground. I think there are others who are interesting and are improving at a greater rate, if not later in the day. I'd be interested in Aunt Pearl here. Again, I think the Europeans might struggle in this. Mother Earth, the horse you were talking about who got mixed up and did actually finish third in the Filly's Mile, she arguably might have the best piece of form of the Europeans here.
Interesting. I'm intrigued by that, and I also want you to address Roger Varian and Nazuna. Luis Saez jumps aboard, and this is a filly that seems to have gait problems, and the Euros in general, when they come here, one thing against them is the very frequently they just don't break with the alacrity of North American-based and trained runners.
I mean, I really don't understand why more European trainers don't use local jockeys, unless they can use a Dettori or a Ryan Moore. I mean, it's admirable. Yeah, they're admirably loyal, but I think Nazuna's chance is greatly increased by the fact that Luis Saez is riding her. I think Miss Amulet's chance is greatly increased by the fact that Julien Leperoux is riding her, because they can get these horses faster out of the gate. They're more used to it, and I don't really like her in this race. But the only reason I'm not dismissing her completely is because I talked to a trainer, Roger Varian, last weekend, and he seemed very hopeful. And he's got a good record in the Breeders' Cup. He's not won a Breeders' Cup race, but he's been placed in several, including in this race last year with the runner-up Daya. And she's of comparable talent, so I can't see it myself on what I've seen. But the trainer is confident of a big run, and she does look to have done very well physically since her last run too. And Miss Amulet, I thought, was quite interesting. That's just a straightforward question of whether you think she's going to stay. And the honest answer is, I don't know. But she does look a bit more of a sprinter, but she's got the class to take a hand. It's just the final furlong and a half is just a complete unknown.
Let's jump to Saturday. Nick Luck with us, and the participation, I brought this up yesterday, the participation of Glass Slippers in the turf sprint, Nick, absolutely worth discussing, and we've talked before, most notably at Santa Anita down the hill, that felt like it was a race that, you know, at some point, a Euro would annex, but it hasn't happened. This is really a filly of real quality and consistency, and I wish I knew more about her. But you look at that list of participation, and you know who she's faced, including Batash. You would think that this is as you know classy a participant in this race as we've seen.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I mean, normally speaking, I just say next, turn the page, no chance, because the European surf sprinters that have come over just get blown away by the raw pace on show. But I think this race is a bit different this year because there's not quite as much what you'd call really brazen speed on, is there? There's not quite that kind of frenetic California-style race that's just going to take Europeans out of their comfort zone. So I think Glass Slippers might be able to cope early. And if she can cope early and just get into a rhythm, then she's good enough to take a hand in this. I certainly think she's got a better chance of being involved than many horses that have run in this over the years. So I'm not going to completely dismiss her. I can't quite see her winning, but I can see her running quite well.
Well, she's 12-1, and what... I frequently will ask you about riders that are less familiar to North American audiences. Tom Eaves.
Tom Eaves, yes. Vastly experienced rider. Rides for Kevin Ryan. Is Kevin Ryan's son-in-law, in fact. Tom's married to Kevin's daughter, Amy, who used to ride herself with great success. And I chatted to him earlier in the week, and he seems very happy that she can go around the bend okay. He'd ridden around the bend, and yeah, he seemed very confident. She's a very uncomplicated filly. She's an uncomplicated ride, and she's a dual Grade One winner in two of the marquee 5-furlong sprints in Europe: the Flying Five at the Curra and the Prix de l'Abbé last year, and as you say, second to Batash in the King George at Goodwood. That's the 5-furlong sprint run at Glorious Goodwood. So I think she's credentialed enough, and as I say, I don't think she's a difficult ride. Again, it's just she's got to get her out of the game.
We're out of the gate well with Nick Luck, and of course, Nick, you'll enjoy tomorrow and Saturday on the NBC telecast. The Filly and Mare Turf, again, some real quality participation, and some names that if you don't know, you should. Peaceful in here for O'Brien, of course. John Gosden shows up with Tara Bellum. Interesting. I'm anxious to hear your thoughts about Adaria and from James Fanshawe, and I was sort of interested in Cayenne Pepper on the outside for Mrs. Kelly, and got to negotiate a trip from the 14, but a daughter of Australia, a three-year-old filly, and there's been success by three-year-old fillies in this race. Queen's Trust, Nick, one of your best pushes ever with us.
Well, Steve, I can't promise to do something similar. I mean, there's just so little between these fillies, I think, this year. Any of them, I think, could conceivably win. And not to mention, three or four home-trained fillies as well. I think it's a very contentious race. My instinct has been to go for Tara Bellum. I think my confidence probably outstrips the confidence of the connection. I think this distance is going to be ideal for her, a mile and 3:16. She should get a lovely stalking position in behind Mean Mary, and rushing forward, I guess, is going to have to be forwardly placed. But I think the distance for Mean Mary is likely to be a little short and a little long, perhaps, for rushing forward. It should be perfect for Terrabellum, who's got ability to have pace over a mile, but definitely stays this far. She's not had her ground the last twice. Earlier in the season, when she had fast ground, she looked as though she might go quite a long way toward the top. You know, she's only just beaten by Circus Maximus at Royal Ascot. And on ratings, she's got a chance. And, of course, she's got Dottori as well. So, at the likely prices, I thought that she was the most compelling bet here.
Excellent. Any prospect for some of the alternatives, because they're all going to be well priced. I mean, Terrabellum's well priced enough.
Yeah,
to begin with.
Yeah, I mean they're all sort of similarly priced. KN Pepper is a filly who I really like. I think she'll be very suited by the conditions. They've been prepping her for this for a long time. Sadly, as you know, her owner passed away in the summer, and he really wanted her to run in this race, and they're really doing it in his memory and honour, and he wanted her to race on at 4 and 5, so she's going to have another crack next year. And I think Sarah Kelly is going to be present at Keeneland, and I know this would mean an enormous amount to Jessica Harrington if she were to win with Cam Pepper. She seems confident of a big run. I can see her running really well. I don't think Ordari is out of it. You know, she's a filly on the up. How is she going to handle slightly quicker ground? I don't know, but she's definitely a filly on the up. So, I wouldn't want to put you off. But I've just had to go with a filly who I think got the class, got the proven form, has been slightly forgotten about because she sort of sank in bad ground last time, and I think has a sort of race setup that might really suit her.
Let's turn to the mile, Nick, and the decision by Andrew Balding to commit Kameko to this race. It seemed like it came very early, and it seemed decisive. And we frequently talk about how the arc of participation in this event went from sort of a end of season afterthought. Let's go. Why not? It's big money. Still doing well, that kind of thing, to targeted opportunity. And Kameko, who, of course, was bred right here, and a Kitten's Joy colt, the Calumet fashioned, and a modest purchase, and then has gone on to this really outstanding career. To me, he immediately becomes a player. And then Siskin's participation for Judmont, who, certainly knows what to do. We've heard some positive things about Lope Fernandez, and John Quinn's got Safe Voyage, one master, who's now 6 years old. Keep expecting her to disappear, but she keeps coming. And if anything goes wrong, Order of Australia gets a chance to draw in.
Yeah, I mean, lots of interesting horses. Yeah, you can make bits and pieces of cases for most of them. There's no doubt the two horses that have the sexiest profiles, I suppose, are the 2 3-year-olds, Kameko and Siskin. They're pretty closely matched. Kameko, I think, is more of a strong staying miler, and Siskin is more of a 7 furlong type miler. The sort of horse that tends to do quite well in this race, more in that kind of, that expert eye type mould, that Goldakova mould, the fast miler with a turn of foot. If he gets a nice trip round, I think he's going to be dangerous to all. And Kameko, I think they're going to have to get him out of the gate and not sit too far off the pace. He's been an unlucky horse a few times this season. I just worry whether he's got the sort of back to the 7 furlong boot, if you like, around these two turns to hold his pitch. If he has, he'll come home really strongly, and he's got loads of ability. But he's going to be very well found in the market, I suspect. So, from a betting point of view, I'd look elsewhere. Again, I think there's a 7 or 8 potential winners of this race. In the end, I think it might stay at home, this race. I think Chad Brown might take it with Digital Age, cutting back in trip. But this is a late bloomer from a very, very good European family that goes back to Time Charter. But he looks a completely different proposition, I thought, last time. He's quite well drawn. I don't think he'll be too far back. I think it wouldn't surprise me if he got first run on the closers, this horse. And he's not going to be stopping. I'm saying he's going to win, but I could see him. If a horse is going to pull off a shock, it might be him.
gets us to the turf, and we're confronted with one of those classic O'Brien scenarios where Magical and Mogul will force people to either to eat, do an either or Nick or a both or a neither. Give us some thoughts because there's also Gosden in here with Lord North and Dermot Weld, who is still looking for that elusive Breeders' Cup win, one of the world's top horsemen. Tarnawa getting plenty of attention. Donja caught my eye the other morning, Nick. That's a perky filly for Hank Grew. And then there's Medaya for Gosden.
Yeah, it's a good group. It's a good group of horses. Tarnawa is the one that makes the most appeal to me. On her numbers, she's not that far behind Magical already, and she's improving, and she's got a sharp turn of foot, and she relaxes well in her races. And I think a mile and a half on decent ground is exactly up her street. Emma Weld rates for the best chance he's ever had of a Breeders' Cup winner. Well, she better be, because he hasn't had one yet. But yeah, I think there's a lot to like about her. She's moving forward at the right time of her career. Obviously, Magical sets the standard, and she's very consistent, and she beats males on a regular basis, and her run behind Gayap at Leopardstown was tremendous. You can forget Asker. She ran well at Asker, to be honest, but it was, the ground was terrible, and she got poorly positioned. So she's better than that. And she deserves to be favourite, but not by much. And I think, you know, her own stable companion, Mogul, is a horse who is definitely starting to come to a peak. And it'll mean a lot to Coolmore if he can win. You know, in essence, they would probably rather he won than Magical, because he's a very expensive horse who's got selling potential. And she's already won her on grade ones or whatever it is. So, you know, it's a bit like Highland Reel and Found all over again. So I think there's some mileage in Mogul, but I think Tanawa's got a slightly more appealing profile for me.
Pierre Boudot ends up getting on board for that Grand Prix de Paris and sticks with. I'm guessing that Ryan Moore would have had his choice of the two.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? You would think so, that Ryan's chosen Magical. I mean, I guess she's a difficult horse to get off. But, you know, he sort of rather had to ride Found in Santa Anita, didn't he, having won the previous year on her at Keeneland, but then got done by that brilliant running ride by Shaney Heffernan. And you rather sense that a lot of people within the Coolmore camp that year were sort of the mind that Highland Reel was the number one. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that the parallels are completely spurious. But as I say, I think Dr. Weld might get his elusive Breeders' Cup winner here.
I do want to ask you before I get some general, you know, I want you to just touch on, you know, anything else from the weekend. But tell me about Donja, and you know, this is a German-bred Teofilo filly out of a Mount Livermore mare, and you know, a winner at Cologne. And participated in what essentially are, you know, the top group ones in Germany at Baden-Baden as well, in the Prix von Baden. She just caught my eye, Nick, really sprightly.
Yeah, I mean, the connections have had a runner in this race before and who has run well and, you know, probably an above its odds. And there's no reason why she shouldn't give a good account of herself, but I'm not even sure even on the best of performance she should be good enough to beat Magical, Mogul, Tanawa and co. You know, she's very, very tough in game, and this has been the target for a long time. So I'm not going to fall off my chair if she snaffles a bit of minor money, but I'm by the same token, I don't think I can give, I can't find any obvious reason to give massive encouragement. Other than that, she's very brave, and she'll definitely stay the distance. And she does have quite a nice pedigree.
Nick Luck with us, and before we wrap, it's not fair to confine Nick to just the international runners. he can pick out winners on the main track. Give us some other opinions, Nick, going into the weekend on some of the features, Distaff Classic, anything else that caught your eye. You've given out your share of those.
I think Tizalor will win the Classic. I'd rather he was drawn further out, for sure. We know that. But if he can get out and just ease out, then I think he's the class in the race. I'm inclined to be happy to subscribe to the view that he's posted both as below, slightly below par efforts at Churchill Downs. If that's running badly and running like that, then, you know, what is he when he runs well? Well, he's the sort of monster that recorded that massive fire figure in the Travis. And for me, that should be good enough here to deal with these for all the trio of Bathurst to the outside. So 'tis the lore I like in the Classic. I wondered if Dunbar Road might spring a bit of a surprise in the Distaff. When you get these races that are billed as two horse races, we know it often happens. And Monomoy Girl's a wonderful mare. It's quite hard to put an absolute marker on what she's achieved this season, and because she always saves a bit for herself, you never quite know what she's done. I think we'd probably have a better idea against this group, and the issue obviously with Swiss Skydiver is whether this is really far enough for her to be at her optimum. So I thought Dunbar Road, who, don't forget, went off a heavy favourite to be the much underappreciated Distaff winner of last year, Blue Prize, in the race here last fall, and actually ran pretty well behind Blue Prize in the late, and has been training very well on the track at Keeneland, and has had a wind operation in the summer, a breeding operation in the summer. I thought she had a quite an interesting chance in the Distaff.
I keep mentioning, as everybody handicaps the Distaff, I seem to close out each conversation by saying, and then there's going to be Chad Brown at 14 to 1 or 16 to 1. And there's a lot of people that are going to feel silly if they watch that happen. I know exactly the thought. I like that. I'm glad that you went there. Anything else from tomorrow or Saturday?
Oh God! I must have given you enough by now, Steve. I think that's my clutch for the time being.
Nice.
But I can't wait. It's going to be a great event, and I just want to get at it now.
Outstanding, Nick. Everything else well? In such a strange set of circumstances. That your girls are good.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Touch wood. They're good, and they're at school still. So. That my eldest two have been back. I mean, they got most. They got a half a term in the summer, and they've been back in September. So that's a relief. And even though the country's in lockdown again, you know, if they're still at school and we can still work, then that's really the most important thing. You know, we're lucky in that respect. And you know, like everybody else, we just keep plowing on. And I realize I'm in a very fortunate minority to be allowed over here for the week.
Oh, I was going to say, very pleased that you're able to be on hand, because there was some uncertainty when we spoke a month ago. Nick Luck, everybody, who, if you're not following, I'd be surprised. Nick, best of luck this weekend, and for everybody on the broadcast team, thanks so much as always.
Thanks so much, Steve. Cheers.
Nick Luck, everybody, and I'll pull out the old, the old UK brilliant, right? Brilliant. They always say brilliant. He's unbelievable. One of the first conversations we had with Nick, going way back, and it was, I think it was, it must have been at Santa Anita, and it was when we had that transition, because we had had... we'd had Kate Miller from William Hill for several years, racing Kate. And then she was sort of transferred, became more of a administrative type at William Hill. And when that happened, she wasn't going to come to Breeders' Cup. So she said, how about Nick Luck? I said, okay. So Nick joined us I was just astounded, because here I am. I've always got to have either PPs or at least the listing and I use the DRF quick sheets, and so that's how I'm keeping tabs on the horses. And it didn't matter what horse I brought up or what race, and Nick's got nothing. He's standing there next to me, and he is, in the course of his dissertations, he's pulling out the specific performance and this on the up, 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 and the stretch at the Kura and at this and at Epsom, and I've never seen anything like it. And you know, we went over probably 36 horses, maybe more, and he literally completely just it's all just rattling around in that coconut. So. It's going to be a very international series of conversations because Kev is going to join us next, Kev Humphreys. We're going to take a break here. And as I told you, no commercials, just some music in between breaks here today. And we'll come back with Kev and then Marcus Hirsch, as promised. So heavy dose of international so that you get as much perspective as possible. And Marcus will talk about the main track races as well. And I told you that Mike Welch in Hour 3, Gary Young is confirmed for Hour 3, Steve Askin, and more. Nick Tamaro, too. We got Nick to give his juvenile picks for tomorrow. So let's step away for a couple of minutes, a little music, and come back with the long shot lad, Kev Humphreys.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.